Good morning. Today's reading is taken from Prancing Novelist by Brigid Brophy, beginning with the preface. This is a defence of prose fiction. It is a defence because fiction has been much attacked during much of its history, which is a longer one than many people know, and in the last 30 or so years has often been left for dead. But I am no more on the defensive than Sidney and Shelley were when they wrote their respective defences of poetry, verse fiction. I am claiming not merely that fiction is not guilty as charged, but that good fiction is positively and absolutely good. Arraigned on a capital charge, Socrates put forward the defence not only that he was not guilty, and not only that it would be unjust to cause his death, but that, if his fellow citizens truly wanted to execute justice, they would subsidise his life by voting him pension rights to free dinners. Fiction is frequently tried today on a charge of being already dead, which in the case of an artistic form, as distinct from a person, luckily need mean no more than a temporary interruption. All the same, a literary form needs persons to practice it, and persons need dinners. The most reasonable and practical defence that can be put forward for fiction is to demand justice, in the shape of dinners for its practitioners. If fiction is temporarily dead, then it is because it has been starved. The entity so often pronounced dead, something called the novel, has no more actual existence than the 2.6 children of the average family. Not every highly individual work of fiction is good fiction, but all good fiction is highly individual. A defence of fiction as a genre can become a positive defence only if it insists how good a good individual work or oeuvre can be. I might have chosen to interleave my generic defence of fiction with an assertion of the individual goodness of Ronald Fairbank's works of fiction, simply because I think Fairbank a very good writer. But in fact, his connection with my general theme is more organic. Fiction seems to me the victim of a prejudice, or more probably an inhibition. The inhibition has produced false rationalisations and distorted perspectives, including the habit of mistaking the trappings, naturalism, of one particular type of novels, Victorian ones, for the essence of the whole genre. Fairbank, to my mind, is the novelist who freed fiction from naturalism, or to be exact, freed it again in the 20th century. After the death of the naturalistic convention, a convention which had only been accidental anyway, it was Fairbank who saw how fiction could slough off the corpse and proceed alive and well from the artistic point of view, although its health implies a sharp social appetite for dinners, and also in resumed continuity with such quite non-naturalistic, yet traditionally respectable and serious novels as Don Quixote. Consequently, it seemed to me that Fairbank's was the individual oeuvre which I could set, like a solo voice, against the chorus of my general drift, in such a way that each commented on, illustrated, and set off the other. Fairbank saw straight, when contemporaries of his, even talented ones, were circling in a fog, thanks to two items in the individual nature of his talent. He had a passion, a critical, connoisseur's passion, for painting, and painting had already lived through a crisis about the death of naturalism. In painting, naturalism had been brutally killed by the invention of photography. Fairbank was also a militant, defensive in the positive sense, homosexual, which set him free to make rational aesthetic decisions at a time when the arts were still suffering the trauma of the Wilde trials, and when heterosexuals and apologetic homosexuals treated the whole subject of aesthetics as taboo. These considerations created a simple and logical form for my book to inhabit. Sidney and Shelley couched their defences of poetry in prose, but I dare say they convinced more people by their poems. On the publication of my most recent novel, a critic in the United States, Mr. Robert Phelps, generously pronounced it the best argument I know for claiming that the novel is alive and well in London. Despite Mr. Phelps's generosity, there are few signs of universal conversion by that argument. And I suppose that if you are convinced fiction is dead, you won't hear any arguments to the contrary that are put in fiction. So I have written this defence of fiction in the medium of non-fiction, and in the hope of persuading benevolent readers that fiction is alive and good. Here ends the reading. Have a good day.